Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, Angela Alberti.
Hello to our listeners. I am your host, Angela Alberti. You could be tuning into us from two different podcast platforms, either the Ivy Podcast or the Workforce Agility Podcast. Wherever you're tuning in from, we want to thank you guys for spending some time. If you've had a chance to listen to some of the podcasts that I've done before, then you know we're all about talent and talent delivery. And that's exactly the case with whom I have the privilege of interviewing today, Noel Wolf with Collinwood. Noel, can you give us a little bit about yourself?
Sure thing. Thanks, Angela. Appreciate you having me. My name is Noel Wolf. I'm managing partner and founder of a veteran-owned information technology staffing firm based in Chicago. We have offices in Dallas, Chicago, and Indianapolis. Been in business since 2014, and have been in the IT staffing recruiting business for about 25 years now.
Wow. Well, thank you, Noel, for spending some time with us. We're going to get into the depths of things from, you know, veteran staffing all the way through entrepreneurship and your general outlook on market conditions. But before we hop into those areas, can you give the audience a little bit of a background, I guess a career timeline of how you started within this industry? I think it's always so interesting because staffing is one of those industries that no one grows up wanting to be in. It finds you and it sucks you in. Can you tell us your story?
Sure. You actually have that exactly right. my journey into staffing specifically started in 1995. I helped my younger brother get a job with a staffing agency based in Cleveland. At the time, I was a route sales rep for a company called Aramark, and, you know, was in the union and, you know, making an okay money for, you know, the age I was at the time. But it's a pretty laborious job. It's not just delivery. Or not just sales. I'm hauling rugs up and down steps and delivering uniforms, and it's hot in the summertime, cold in the wintertime. Paid the bills, but it wasn't the most enjoyable job. Helped my brother, as I said, get a job in a staffing agency, and he has also had a pretty successful career in our industry. But in that early time, watching him go from someone I had to, you know, buy a couple suits for and a couple pairs of dress shoes, to someone that was, got to work in a nice air conditioned office and was making a great income, set off a light bulb on my head to say, wait, hold on, what is it that you're doing over there?
Right.
And, you know, back in 1995, there was no internet. It was definitely a different world. But, his explanation to me was, you know, because I said, well, he said, I'm helping companies hire folks. I said, well, can't they just put an ad in the newspaper? Like, isn't that how jobs are found and people get hired? And he said, not always. You know, sometimes there's difficult roles. And he gave the example of, you know, if I were to take a bottling engineer position from Coca-Cola and they needed somebody like that, they may not just be able to put that in the newspaper. They need to perhaps go to Pepsi and proactively recruit someone away. And Coke may not want to do that directly, you know, bad for their brand, but they might utilize an outside agency for that. And for that, the company that my brother worked for and that I went to work for later on earns a placement fee for that. And my brother would get a commission. And I just said, well, I think that's something I'd like to dip my toes in the water and try out. And here we are 25 years later. It's been a great career and a good decision.
Wow. That's interesting. The source of the inspiration behind your story is directly aligned with your sibling and how that completely changed the trajectory of your life. I think that's relatable to a lot of people in staffing. But what was more unique behind that, you know, story is that you're somebody that worked, you know, got their footing, true blue collar work as part of a union, and you see the happenings within this current workforce climate of unions popping up everywhere through, you know, votings that are happening at Amazon, all the way upwards to a group of workers collectively coming together for Starbucks in Pennsylvania. What are your thoughts on this recent uprising, or and just your general perspective as being part of a union in your younger years?
You know, throughout my career, I've wrestled with unions being necessary, not being necessary. Prior to getting into recruiting, as I mentioned, you know, worked for Aramark for a short period of time. I worked for a steel processing manufacturer, steel processing plant. So I worked on a machine called a slitter, and we actually weren't union, but the company I worked for paid union level wages. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that was to avoid, you know, getting a union engaged, or was just, you know, with the intention of taking good care of their employees. So my wrestling with unions is I do feel that in the early parts of the 1900s, when, you know, you maybe perhaps didn't have OSHA and you didn't have the Department of Labor, that you didn't have a lot of the protections that our government has put out there for employees, that it definitely served a purpose. And not say they don't serve a purpose today, mm-hmm. but I'm a champion of, if you take good care of your employees and you pay them fairly, you know, treat them fairly, a union becomes unnecessary. You know, I question when I hear, you know, a union push for tech companies, for instance, like, you know, Google, Facebook, you know, whichever one. And it's a little bit of a head scratcher for me, because I know the folks at those companies are very highly compensated. You know, they're paid hundreds of thousands of dollars. You know, the software engineers are, mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe stock options. So I question why would a union be necessary? Mm-hmm. However, on the flip side, you know, I do hear the horror stories, if they're horror stories, the difficulties that mm-hmm. Amazon has in their warehouses and how they treat their employees. It's mm-hmm. very, sounds like from, you know, what I read, and I haven't worked there myself, but from everything I read and hear, it's a pretty kind of cold, calculated place. And, you know, it's very driven by metrics. And if you want to take a bathroom break, you might get fired. And, you know, so to me, that seems like not a safe place and not a fair place that takes care of their employees. So perhaps a union is necessary in that case. I can't say I'm educated enough on the Starbucks situation. Mm-hmm. Being a fan of Starbucks myself as a consumer, I had thought that they take very good care of their employees as well. I know they have, you know, tuition reimbursement. They have, you know, they offer benefits to their employees. So I wonder what the push or what the impetus is for a union there. So again, I think unions can be beneficial and necessary in the right situations, mm-hmm. but I question why they would be necessary in other situations. I don't know if that exactly answers your question.
No, it does. I think it offers a perfect perspective, because you're somebody that is looking at it through the eyes of an employer, and also having been in that situation in the early onset of your career, it does provide a safety net to a certain element of you know, a certain worker group. And it makes perfect sense in analyzing whether or not there's a necessity revolved around it based on a demand that a group is making at, you know, a company where there is robust benefits, even better perks, and even better salary compensation. So some great insight. And I love this, the opportunity to interview you, Noel, because you offer refreshing perspectives that I don't usually get the chance to talk through. You know, you see the happenings in the news on union work, but also through the lens of a veteran. And thank you, by the way, for the service and the dedication that you've committed to this country and starting that. But can you offer some perspective in terms of veteran hiring as an employer, how you guys have been able to really bridge that gap, and some of the considerations that maybe somebody listening in on today's podcast would need to make as the employer themselves? Maybe that's a cultural impact, or how to even open up this book of talent, I guess you could say, when it comes to veteran hiring.
Yeah, I think, I served in the Marine Corps Reserves. So I was called up for Desert Storm, and I served during my basic training and my MOS training. So I was in from 88 to 96. And I can say that in the time that's elapsed since I served, the world, the country has become a much more favorable place for veterans to, whether it's, start a business. You know, there's multiple avenues now for veterans if they want to become an entrepreneur. There's Bunker Labs, there's IVMF, there's various channels where veterans can get mentorship and support if they wanted to start their own business. But on the employee hiring side, there's been huge strides there as well. There's multiple lists out there of, veteran friendly employers that not only hire veterans, but are hiring military spouses as well. And then the military itself has recognized that there is sometimes a challenge to moving veterans into the workforce, given the skill set they may have picked up or maybe not picked up. You know, it's very difficult to take, I'll just speak for one example. It's very difficult to take someone who was in the infantry, whose job was to, I'm talking purely from an E3 and E4, which is, the enlisted lower ranks. You know, mm-hmm. someone goes in the Marine Corps and spends 4 years in the infantry, it's tough to translate what they did over to a resume to show an employer what they can do that directly correlates or directly relates to that new job of, working in a warehouse or working in an office, because that person didn't get those skills in the military. But there's lots of other intangibles. They know how to problem solve. They know how to work well in groups, but also are likely an individual leader as well. One of the things the military allows folks to do is work alongside one another. And then, depending on your rank, sometimes even despite your rank, you'll be given an opportunity for leadership. And there's not a lot of jobs, corporate America jobs, that allow you to get a leadership opportunity at, 22 years old, 21 years old. So the military offers that. And back to, the military has gotten smarter about that as well. So the Department of Defense has a program that I've actually, our company has taken advantage of, called the SkillBridge program, which is an opportunity for outgoing service members, whether, they're 6 years in or they're retiring, to transition to the corporate world through an unpaid internship. So the person gets to work for, in our case, work for Collinwood for up to 6 months. We don't have to pay them. It's an unpaid internship on our side, but they are still getting paid by their command. There's some paperwork they have to do to be able to take advantage of the program, but they get to spend their last 3 to 6 months still on active duty, but working with us to see if they're a good fit for us and see if we're a good fit for them. In our case, we're an information technology recruiting and staffing firm, so our roles are going to align to, sales and recruiting roles. But there are SkillBridge programs around the country, multiple, big name corporations. Abbott, I know here locally, Abbott Labs has a SkillBridge program. Pepsi has a SkillBridge program. Wow. I think Zurich Insurance has a SkillBridge program, and on and on and on. And they offer all different types of, career options. Ours is very limited. We're a smaller company. We're recruiting and staffing. But you go to some of these larger companies, maybe you're working in a warehouse, maybe you're working in accounting and finance, maybe you're working in sales, maybe you're working in procurement, you're working in software engineering, whatever the case might be. Right. So you're getting exposure to a new job that you didn't perhaps did or didn't do in the military. And on the employer side, it's very low risk to take a military service member. Certainly you get to give back to, folks that have served our country, but, selfishly on the employer side, they get 3 to 6 months to get this person trained and up to speed, make sure they're a good cultural fit and skill fit. And, so wrapping back around to how I started the conversation, I think the world has gotten a lot better about it. I think any veteran that's looking to either start a business or become employed, there's tons of resources out there. LinkedIn has a free premium membership for veterans. There are military service organizations. You can use the SkillBridge program, not just for becoming an employee, you can actually use the SkillBridge program for training as well. So there's for example, here in Chicago, there's a group called a sales platoon that can use the SkillBridge program to train veterans in career and sales. Mm-hmm. There's another SkillBridge program that is, I think they're nationwide, called Code Platoon. You know, dear to my heart, given that I'm in IT, Code Platoon is a coding boot camp. You know, we see a lot of these, you know, was it Full Stack Academy, IC Stars here local, but this one's specifically geared towards veterans. So getting veterans into a career in IT, writing software code, or and so on. So there's a lot of different avenues that weren't available probably as early as 10 years ago. There's lots of avenues available. And I think, you know, I'm a little biased being a veteran, but hiring a veteran's a great choice. You know, there's a lot of intangibles there if you can see beyond what they did in the military.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And thank you for giving us just a plethora of resources that are available, including, you know, the advantageous route that your team has gone with the SkillBridge program. And also obviously going through those indirect benefits of hiring and taking on a veteran and what that can do to positively benefit from a cultural perspective, or even, you know, to an ROI impact of a company's organization. So awesome insight. Thank you once again for that. Now let's go back, because I thought, you know, when we were strategizing in our pre-session about what would be some great topics, and you mentioned something to me that I think is just fascinating, especially for us, like the newer kids on the block in the recruiting space. But talk us through, provide some wisdom on what it was like for you being in the recruiting and staffing industry in the 90s. What was that experience like?
It was definitely different. You know, anybody that's been in the industry, you know, 20, 25 years, you know, the first company I worked for in Cleveland, we had no computers. We didn't have cell phones.
Yeah.
We didn't have, you know, there was no internet.
No, or faxing, basically.
There was a world before internet, kids. you know, so, you know, our typical day, given how our setup was, is, and again, this is, you know, placement agency type work. And if anyone's ever seen, you and I talk about this, Angel, if anybody's ever seen the movie The Boiler Room, you know, Glengarry, Glen Ross, what's the other one I'm missing? Wolf of Wall Street.
Yep.
Now, again, some of those movies, those people were shady.
I'd like to think we are providing an actual
value to the people we deal with. We're not shady. But, you know, the setup was similar. So the company that I worked for, we had a pod manager, you know, recruiting manager, multiple recruiting managers, and then an individual group of recruiters reported to that person. You'd come in the morning, you'd sit at your desk, and there'd be a stack of a list of people that you needed to call that morning. The admin, you know, would come in early and print up call sheets for every recruiter in the office. I think at the time we had 20, 30 recruiters in the office. And if I remember the setup correctly, which I think I do, we spent the morning recruiting. We spent the afternoon doing sales. So you spent the morning calling candidates, going through the candidate files. We had actual file cabinets with, you know, paper records. And
was your ATS.
That was our ATS. There was no ATS. That was our ATS. Your memory and a call sheet was your ATS. And you would just, you know, people in our industry have heard the term dial for dollars. That's what we did. You just powered through. You called number one, you called number two, you called number three, you called number four, and just kept going. And as you went through that list, you were hoping to build rapport with the candidates you reached out to. You know, some were receptive, some were not. And then, you know, you'd find somebody that was indeed, you'd catch them on the right day, catch them on the you know, they just had a conversation with their boss or something, and now they're like, you know, I might actually be open to having a conversation with you about this role that you're working on.
Right.
And then we'd all go to lunch and we'd come back, and the second half of the day was sales focused. I think I was fortunate, because it led to the career I have today, that I was one of the first folks that was interested in the IT side of things. So our firm was primarily engineering. So, you know, washing machine engineers, electrical engineers, civil engineers, any kind of engineering, that was what we were placing. And I was early on with IT. In fact, I remember one of my managers making a comment that, like, you're missing out on all the money, because all of our other recruiters are focused on engineering. You're worrying about, you know, mainframe COBOL developers. But it was, you know, IT just kind of intrigued me. But yeah, it was back then, it was again, no LinkedIn, didn't have the internet, no apps on your phone, no SEO, no automation. It was just building a relationship with someone. You couldn't, hide is probably the wrong word because email and text do serve a purpose and they are tools for us to use, mm-hmm. but you couldn't hide behind email and text messaging. I think a lot of newer recruiters, from what I've heard, my recruiters don't do this and they're newer recruiters, but you know, send an email and then move on with their day. And if they hear back from the candidate, they move on. Mm. But yeah. I think that's, you have to kind of stand out in the crowd and in the noise. That candidate, if they're an active candidate, might get multiple emails that day. And you might stand out simply by following up. I mean, the bar might be that low. If you call them the next day or email them the next day or text them, you know, multi-pronged approach, you might stand out purely on that. I'm a big fan of our team sending thank you notes, handwritten thank you notes. Mm-hmm. And you'd be shocked at how many candidates think that is an amazing old school thing that no one does anymore. And it just helps us stand out.
Yeah, it totally does. I mean, you said it perfectly. There's so much noise going on right now for a candidate. It's such an easy time. I've said this before, to go online and find a plethora of job opportunities. How are you going to stand apart in a very technologically congested, I guess is the word, type of world that we live in? And it is humanizing some of those elements of what you do so that you can be more memorable in the eyes of a candidate. But thank you for that stroll down memory lane. Like in my mind, I'm having a hard time conceptualizing that, but I think it's really refreshing for us to kind of sit back and see what it was like and almost with a sense of gratitude on how far technology has allowed us to get within the recruiting and staffing space. It's really important to know where the industry has come from and how far it's gone. I mean, it is globally a $300 billion industry. So clearly there's a lot of great things at play there, but we've come a long way, Noel.
We have, for sure.
So, you know, let's fast forward a little bit and talk about, you know, the year 2014 when you started Collinwood. I'm sure that there was a lot that went into making that decision. So could you tell us a little bit about why you decided to take that leap of faith and be the entrepreneur that you are now?
Yeah. I don't know if we talked about this previously, Angela, and I'm a very transparent person for good or bad.
Right.
And I truly, the impetus for starting my own business, you know, starting Collinwood and doing this on my own was that I was doing very well for a company that I worked for in the early 2000s,
right.
Making more, you know, money for myself and my family than I ever thought I would back when I was working at Aramark and worked in the steel mill. And I was a garbage man for a brief time in the same union. You know, I could have never imagined making the income I was making. But that being said, every year our commission plan changed and you had to work harder to make the same, you know, because they kept taking more of the margin away from us to, pay executives, or I don't know what they were doing with the money. But the reality is I was doing a substantial amount of book of business from all of my, you know, when I talked to colleagues, friends, competitors, they were like, wow, you're doing really well book of business, but you're not seeing the commensurate, you should probably be making a lot more than you're making. So I thought, you know, what I would like to do someday is build this is going to sound very salesy, but build a utopia for salespeople and recruiters where they can be paid fairly. And yeah. I wouldn't change the comp plan every year. And, we could work from home as necessary. We did that, you know, well before, COVID happened. You know, I don't need you to come to the office so I can stare at you. And while you make your phone calls, you know, truthfully, recruiting can be done, with a phone and a laptop. So whether you're sitting here in my office or sitting, saving yourself an hour commute each day, mm-hmm. Let's do that. So again, the impetus for starting the business was I had been doing it for a number of years, knew I was good at it. I had been a director of recruiting, recruiting manager, lots of colleagues, pushing me, you can do this do this on your own. And then finally got to a point in 2014, a company that I worked for had been acquired two times over. My business partner here at Collinwood, Jim, was one of the owners of the original company. And so we sold in 2012, we sold, you know, Jim did very well on a payout. I was a director of recruiting 2 years, and we were a smaller company, about 100 employees with, I think we were doing about $15 million in revenue. We got bought by a larger company based out of Dallas that was, you know, maybe just shy of 1,000 employees and about $100 million in revenue. Wow. And then in, you know, early 2014, got acquired by a global top five consulting firm with, you know, billions of revenue and hundreds of thousands of employees. And I'm like, you know,
totally that, different. Yeah.
That first company we had where it was, you know, we knew everyone's names and families. And, you know, we hired people that we used to joke, we'd hire people that we wouldn't mind inviting to our backyard picnic. And we would joke that we were 99.9% jerk free. So I wanted to get back to that. So, you know, again, selfishly, I knew I could do it on my own. I wanted to make, you know, the money that I felt my big employer was taking from me. Yeah. But the other side was to build this, you know, company in the image I felt, you know, could be beneficial to a person like myself to offer that opportunity.
That's great. Good, you know, a good recap. And selfishly, some of the things that I think I've gone through in my careers is making those, you know, really critical decisions on what you want to do and how the trajectory of your life is going to go. But now let's say it's 2014 and you have the chance to give Noel some advice, like, hey, these are some of the mistakes that we made. Let's avoid that. Or maybe that entrepreneur, that early entrepreneur that's listening in on this call, what would that advice be?
I have two, I would think. One is I needed to have more money saved up than I did, you know, right, especially in our industry, just the way the accounting and the math works.
It's a lot of cash,
a lot of cash flow. In fact, I had a conversation with one of our consultants about a month ago. We got into a conversation and he thought he should get paid X and we were billing Y. And I kind of walked through it with him. I said, you know, you gotta understand, he's a contractor, but we pay our contractors just like we pay our employees. So he doesn't have to invoice us. We pay him every 2 weeks, you know? So the point being, I had to walk through with him the financials of what the outlay of cash to him is before I see my first invoice payment from the client that he's working at. So, you know, it was upwards of, I think the number was $60,000.
Yeah.
I'm like, you got to understand, I'm going to be out $60,000 before I see the first invoice from the client. And that invoice is going to be $60,000. It's just going to be for your first 2 weeks of billing.
Yeah.
So I'm always going to be behind, right? And then when I get to 10 consultants billing, 20 consultants billing, you know, 100 consultants billing, that'll always be there. So I knew that, but I didn't quite understand that if you're successful, you also have lots more problems because you're successful. So cash flow is definitely, has been a learning experience for me. And the second thing I would say I learned was, I joke with my kids, I told you this, Angela, you know, I told my kids, I said, don't hire your friends because you may have to fire your friends.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I take, and that's, you know, I say that jokingly, but somewhat seriously. I don't know that I would go down that path again, just because I value the relationships I've built with people over time. You know, most of the people I've worked with are also friends. Like I, you know, they come over my house, you know, we might be, I consider, you know, my team here, as much as they report to me and I'm the boss, I'm, you know, we're friends. I want them to feel comfortable coming over my house or knocking on my door to have a conversation about business or personal topics. And so we did hire some friends in the beginning. It gave me comfort in that I could, you know,
trust
them. They had a track record, but I had a little bit of a blind spot in where the type of company we were building and how they might fit into that company. Mm-hmm. You know, I use the analogy, a football analogy, about one of the folks that, you know, he was a great fullback, and I was building a football team. So I brought him on. I said, you're my guy. Come on in. Well, it turned out, you know, after a period of time, we didn't really need a fullback as much as we needed a running back. And I apologize for anybody on this, you know, call that doesn't get that analogy. But, you know, a fullback is a really big, strong back who just runs the ball into the end zone on, you know, third down. Like, you know, when you get to, you know, fourth and one, this is the person they just need to run forward and put it in the end zone. And you can count on them to do that. They're typically very, very qualified to do that. And that's what I hired. But when I took a look, we needed somebody who could do more than that, that could zig and zag and catch the ball and run the ball and block sometimes. You know, this recruiter is a great recruiter, still friends with him today. Hi, Mark. He's great. He does a great job for the company he's with. But for us, the ability to change from, you know, Monday's a Java developer, Tuesday's a Unix admin, mm-hmm. Wednesday's an Oracle database administrator, just wasn't his forte. Mm-hmm. High character person, still friends with him today, but he's an SAP expert. And yeah. He came from an SAP firm to join us. That's where we were together. He did great at that company, came to us, modicum of success, moved on to an SAP firm after us. Mm. And I think we're both happy with the way it went down. Again, that's why we're still friends today. But again, my takeaway is maybe don't hire friends, because you may have to someday, disengage with your friends, fire your friends, or they may fire you too. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that's a little bit of a heartache. So those would be my two takeaways.
No, those are great takeaways. Those are great takeaways. I mean, if you look at the success rate of staffing companies, it has an over 70% failure. And a lot of that is attributed to why most companies fail. It's a cash flow issue, but it's especially the case when you think about staffing. And we're sitting on an industry that has the average DSO, day sales outstanding, that sits at 52 days. So considerable amount of cash flow. You're limited in on what you can do. You usually are sticking to, you know, your savings on that. But to that extent, taking it personally on your second point, you know, you got to be prepared to let people go in the beginning. And some of those could be your friends, and whether or not you really want to make that decision. And I think that's super critical in how you're looking to build your company. So fantastic takeaways. No, we're wrapping up today's session, which honestly, it makes me a little bit bittersweet, because I feel like you're somebody that, you know, I could sit here and talk with for a long time. There's just so much knowledge that you bring to the industry. But as we're wrapping up today's call, you know, can you give some perspective on where you think this industry is going? And it can be boiled down to IT in general. The perspective on, you know, the last maybe 2 years with the pandemic, where it's at now, and where you think it's going?
I think it's going to continue to be for anyone in technology, not just our side of the equation, you know, staffing and recruiting, but anyone in technology, I highly encourage anyone to touch technology in some way. Mm-hmm. If you're a high school student and you're sitting in your guidance counselor's office and they're encouraging you to go be a basket weaver, I won't pick on any particular major. So let's just
basket weaving.
If you're going to be a basket weaving major, I highly advise you to not do that and fire your counselor. you should be getting into IT somehow, some way. Now, you know, there are different, and you may say, but Noel, I'm not a math whiz, or I'm not a computer science person. That's fine. There are so many different types of careers that you could have that touch IT, that relate, that are highly compensated. You know, if you like interacting with people, maybe go into sales. If you like art, maybe go into user experience and user interface design and graphics. If you are mathematically inclined, and now you're getting into, you know, being a data scientist. And so there, if you like writing, if you're an English major, there are technical writing positions. Yeah. There are so many jobs in IT related to IT that you should look at. I don't know any career high school counselors. They probably will write in the comments section or send me a bad email, but you should not, if you're inclined, you should not be satisfied taking a $20 an hour or $40K job if you have the ability and the inclination to get into IT, where, you know, we have one of our clients who's paying college graduates, again, they're software engineers, college graduates, $120,000 starting salary. Wow. for someone right out of college. Like, why would you go be a basket weaver if you could get into IT. And I apologize, we're coming up on the end of the call, but you know, as far as the outlook, it's going to be great. Every peer of mine, you know, I'm a member of a couple different industry groups, and I talk to owners of other staffing firms, and there aren't enough IT folks in IT to sustain the demand. You know, I apologize if I'm going to bore you with a story, a quick story, I promise, Angela. My mom said to me one time a couple of years ago, hey, I read in the newspaper that people from foreign countries are taking all of our jobs, and that's why Disney had to lay a bunch of people off, or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, Mom, that's blatantly false. We do not graduate enough computer science graduates in our country. We have to bring people in from other countries. Yeah. And all the people I know, whether they're from a foreign land or grew up here in the United States, are still highly compensated. They're not taking away, you know, anyone's job here in the US. But so anyways, a great outlook for being in IT, certainly a great outlook for my industry in IT staffing and recruiting, because our clients won't be able to find enough people, and they'll need people like us who are very proficient at this to help them find those folks.
That's awesome. I think that's a great takeaway. And I see it happening every single day, you know, on the MyBase pay side, whenever we're looking at, you know, the candidates that we bring on board to payroll. And it's exactly the same advice I have been giving my little brother for maybe 5 years now, and maybe one day he'll bring it on. But maybe. Well, it was absolutely fantastic to sit down with and interview you. I mean, I'm just a fan of your story and a fan of what you've done, you know, starting that blue collar work, building your own business, having this culture, you know, tapping into veteran workforces, much levels of respect and admiration that I've gained in just the past couple of weeks that we've had the chance to get to know each other. So thank you for spending some time with us today. How can we find you? How can we get a hold of you?
The easiest way, certainly on LinkedIn, Noel Wolf, NOELWOLF. If anyone wants to email me, it's pretty easy. It's my name with a dot in the middle, noel.wolf@collinwood.co. That's collinwood.co. And I'd be happy to answer anyone's questions, help anyone that needs our help.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, thanks again for being on the show. And thank you to our listeners for tuning in. As I wrap up with every show, you know, time is one of the more valuable things that we can give one another. So we appreciate you guys spending some time with us.
Thanks, Angela. Appreciate it. Thank you all.
Absolutely. We'll see you guys on the next episode.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.